Welcome back, everyone, to Judging Nerd Culture. I'm Ollie.
I'm Coop.
Today we're talking about Batman.
Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about Batman. We're going to talk, you know, mostly about Batman, War on Crime, which I was a little worried when I saw that title, but it is a satirical, don't worry. If you've listened to our show up until now, this comic probably aligns with your interests. It at least aligns with ours in most ways. So it's not a pro war on crime idea necessarily.
It's just a war on crime understanding.
Yes.
You know something I appreciate about us, Cooper?
Mm-hmm.
Most things try not to have a political agenda. We do.
God, like, you can't just do it. Just commit, people. Like it's not, you know. We are so far beyond that point where that can't just be a part of regular life. Like, it's just fucking making conversation. Like, it is, I embrace this.
Hell,
like,
yeah.
If you're gonna be upset about us saying, like, what if black and poor people had rights, and, you know, other, like, just bizarre, just pie-in-the-sky fucking hypothetical scenarios in this. If that's going to irritate you, then, you know, you get the hell out, because that's what we're going to be doing here.
Nice. So, Batman War on Crime is a short miniseries or graphic novel, depending on how you buy the book, by Alex Ross and, I forgot, the other guy.
I cannot imagine this being separate issues. This is just like a one nice bite-sized 45-minute sitting of comic.
Yeah, it's by Alex Ross and Paul Dini. Paul Dini is the co-writer. Alex Ross is also a co-writer and the artist, as you can assume, because it's Alex Ross. Why the hell would you have him on and not have him do the art?
Yes. That, I imagine, is for people who are more entrenched in comics than I am. Like, a name like, oh, you know, it's Christopher Walken. Why would you have him and not have him act a weird character? If you remember from our episode about Kingdom Come, the big Justice League, like, bigger than this, but still small for comics purposes, miniseries, this is such a delicious art style.
Mm-hmm. There's a thank you at the very beginning by both of the writers, and Alex Ross is a little bit longer as he thanks everyone who posed for him and took pictures in costumes that he had people make, so that he could then draw them.
Yeah.
That's hilarious and awesome.
So, being an audio-only medium, we won't be insufferable trying to communicate what about this is so special for longer than just a little bit. But, like, it is, like, all, I would almost say a hyper-realistic style. Like, you get way more human-like features. Like, these could be photos if not for the very stylized light and shadow.
Yeah. Everything looks as if though it's through a strange film that tells you this is not reality, but it looks hyper-realistic.
Yeah. Just a slight change, and these could be, like, just portraits, like, with the intent of capturing exactly what something looks like. It's not. And part of the whole deal is that this is Batman, and the shadow and light, he just straight up talks about it in the... This whole thing is a Batman inner monologue.
Yeah,
right?
pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you see the scenes as they unfold, but it is all his perspective. There's no dialogue, other than him sort of recounting dialogue from other people.
Yeah, there's very little communication between him and anyone else. It's mostly just him doing his job and getting things done and thinking about what to do next and what the greater woes of Gotham might actually be.
Yeah.
But it starts off like most of... Alex Ross's stories do, with the quickest recap of the fucking origin stories.
Yep, I love this.
Do love it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I like this as well. Like, the last time this happened, we had some fun with it, was the, this wasn't the Alex Ross, this was the, why am I blanking on this?
Grant
Morrison, yeah, the Superman All-Star, they do just like a 4 panels, 8 words, now you have the intro that you, of course, already know about. And, like, the Spider-Verse gag where they capture me. Like, you know, people are savvy with it. Now, I think this is extra appropriate because we see this origin story kind of get remixed over the course of this comic. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the Batman business. You can take it from here. He's your guy.
My boy.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, everyone knows Batman. Rich boy. lived with a rich family, parents got shot, he decided, I'm gonna fix everything by beating up mentally ill people.
Right, exactly. I'm going to just kick the shit out of people who are driven to crime through desperation, which this fucking comic talks about. Like, they get into it. They don't get into the mentally ill supervillain side of things, they just get into the, you know,
that's honestly, I think that's beyond their expertise. That's to a level that really someone else should talk about.
I mean, that's the type of thing that you would have to just deal with one of those characters at a time, yes. I think. But this is this very brief cameo from the Penguin, which I didn't even necessarily realize right away until, like, I was a few pages later. I was like, oh! but other than that, it's all the gritty, ground-based, you know, game.
Yeah, just actual gang with regular guns.
Yep. And this isn't, like, you know, movie Batman's kind of, like, powered super suit. Like, he is just wearing the spandex in this.
Yeah,
he makes great pains to note how he attempts not to get shot, because it would actually matter. This is, like, old-style Batman.
Yeah, and it's great to see that, too. Just like, all right. Okay, that went perfectly. He shot at my shadow, not me. Great, because I don't want to die.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the ancient Greeks would go into battles nude when they really, A, wanted to intimidate the enemy, and B, wanted to just put the risk of life and death immediately on their minds so as to make them better dodgers. I don't think that worked. I mean, the ancient Greeks eventually lost, you know? But, like, that's part of Batman's whole deal here is, I'm scary. Nobody's ever actually shot me. Like, he goes into a good amount of detail about how he has made specific choices to create this mythology of himself. Like, you know, if you didn't really buy Batman, like, if you just, like, ah, that's too silly, I can't get into it, this makes a pretty decent case for that being a thing that could be in a hypothetical world.
Indeed. And it starts off just basically with him being on his regular routine, just patrolling the city. And within the first page, it's astounding the fact that it's a 2-page massive spread of art.
Yeah.
Where everything just kind of, like, there's a scene over in the corner, there's a scene over here, it just kind of blends together in a way that most comics don't. There's usually harder lines, more panels. This is just, like, a fog of war style depiction of his night.
It's laid out like a medieval tapestry would be, that scenes of, like, the king doing important things. It's just like it's just a bunch of scenes next to each other in a way that still flows, like it reads. You're going left to right, top to bottom, but it's also just like the whole page is this beautiful painting of Batman shit happening.
And that's the majority of this story, is these double spread pages. There's only a few that are single pages of whatever is going on. And I think that definitely adds something to the I don't know, the grandioseness of this story.
Yeah, but, well, also, you know, it kind of feels like a montage. Like, it does sell what what they're trying to sell, which is, like, these are scenes that could just happen day in and day out over and over to Batman all the time. And one specific thing happens in this that makes it not be just routine beating up criminals.
Yeah, and it is just routine. So far, he goes through, fights a gang, goes through, stops a robbery, goes through and fights one of his nameless supervillains who thinks they're smarter than him.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the Riddler.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an Enigma-looking old guy right there.
And as he's, you know, doing all of this stuff, eventually he gets to another case.
Mm-hmm.
Another fight that maybe doesn't go as planned, as he tries to stop a convenience store robbery, and this happens after he hears the gunshots, stops the villain, but when he goes back inside, it's too late.
The two kind of shopkeepers are shot dead, and this is like a little family convenience store, and it turns out their son was hiding behind the counter and made it out unscathed. So this is, you know, this is the remix I was talking about before. You know, this kid just had his parents taken from him, you know, via murder and crime. Just like a greed-motivated, selfish act, which he, of course, can empathize with.
Mm-hmm. And it's great where when this happens, because they put it right after basically him interacting with some rich guy who's like, ah, we're going to tear down the slums and put up some rich stuff. And he mentions that the guy constantly compares them to as being similar.
Yeah.
And Batman's like, I definitely have more in common with this, like, super poor kid, because he's about to be mega poor right now,
mm-hmm.
than I do with this chump.
Yeah. There's a whole deal made about, like, you know, yeah, I'm Bruce Wayne. You know, during the day, I hang out with rich people. They all think that we're best friends, and, like, they couldn't be more wrong because I'm just barely fucking listening to all the stupid shit they have to say. You know, I'm putting a little flavor on it, but that is basically his attitude.
Not even much flavor. Mm-hmm. In this, the genuine, like, apathy and almost distrust and hatred towards the hyper-rich is pretty great that mm-hmm. he has it himself. Just, like, all of these people are only slightly... not villains.
Yeah.
Jad, their base.
Yeah. And this rich guy he's dealing with, like, Randall Snow or something like that. Yeah. Randall Winters. Like, a real, yeah. you know, name your character after Winter if you want him to just come off like a real bastard. That's typically what happens, right? But, you know, he's just saying, like, yeah, we're gonna build these, like, super luxury high-rises, and then you and I, let's go in on this together, we'll be filthy rich, you know. Who cares about the crime? Who cares about the people who can't move out of there, who are going to get their fucking existences gentrified out? You know, I've got cops on my payroll who can sort that out. Like, this is, you know, just a blue-collar criminal motherfucker. Which then Bruce Wayne decides, you know, okay, I'm going to go in as Batman. I'm going to try to figure out, you know, I'm going to help the innocent people who are there. You know, people shooting each other at a convenience store is not good either. We need to stop that. But also, I want to kind of get to the bottom of this and, like, what would we have to do to actually make this region turn out okay?
Yeah, and on his first night there, this is when he meets the mm-hmm. kid. And the image where he does meet him, where he looks down and sees him,
mm-hmm.
like, even with his damn Batman hood on, like, he looks grossed out.
Yeah.
Like, looking back at this kid, like, oh, God.
Yeah. You know, because it's bringing him back. And the kid's face is just like, I mean, you know, this is heart-wrenching. Like this is where the hyper-realism style, like, really super matters. And, you know, the stylized hyper-realism. Like, I really liked the way Kingdom Come looked. I think that this treatment of this story, which is much more down to earth and personal and just this one, you know, sympathetic character at a time, is a much better use of the art style that can capture these, like, very subtle expressions and emotions and stuff, compared to, like, Kingdom Come was just big, huge, high-flying, explosive. Like, it had those emotional moments, but it was also heavy on the goofiness, because you can't be not goofy when it's the Justice League. But, you know, Batman has room for this. I just think it's very appropriate.
Indeed. So, after this, we basically get a few scenes of him continuing to watch over the kid throughout the night, even though he's not, you know, talking with him, just thinking to himself, like, oh, God, I've done this exact thing. In, like, 2 hours, the cops are going to feed him, take him to do this and mm-hmm. do that or whatever else, and then he's going to go home alone and feel sad and hate himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't say that, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
And
he's like yeah, the kid's going to get help, but not enough.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of laments on this for a while before eventually moving on to just think about crime and the effects it has on people in general.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the criminal justice system, the fact that crime affects, you know, whoever killed is and whoever the family members are and a community in totality. Mm-hmm. Like, it's genuinely good introspection as to what mm-hmm. crime actually does and is.
Yeah, and it's not just focused on, you know, oh, shooting people bad, which is true. Like, we are focused on that. Yes. Every fucking episode we talk about that. But still, he's going into more like the, you know, hey, I'm going about my day. I see this person. I know that she is a criminal. Right now she's holding down, like, this comes a little later, but
yeah.
You know, right now she's holding down a regular job, but she'll probably be back because crime pays well. And, you know, day jobs are just, like, dehumanizing, monotonous drudgery for people who aren't super rich. And, you know, when when some violence happens to you, you know, you sometimes you get aggro and want to go get revenge, or sometimes you just are left with no other choice. And like it's focusing on the cyclical nature. He's not just like, eh, gang, they're all scumbags, you know, get a job. Like it. And I could definitely see a lesser Batman writer just going down the easy road, but
yeah, and no, this does a really good job just showing like he's gonna stop them again, and he almost feels bad about it.
Yeah, again, like, that's, you know, amazing. Hey, no shooting people. I'm gonna punch you if you do that. I'm Batman. But like, let's, you know, it's bigger than this.
Mm-hmm. And let's see, where does it go after that? After his, you know, long sprint of lamenting over crime and injustice. Yeah, yeah. After that, he just sort of starts doing his surveying of that area.
Mm-hmm.
He starts doing reconnaissance and putting down, you know, getting that information about who's in charge, what gangs are doing what, where are they, what are they doing, and why.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this, he understands, ends up being that as businesses leave, people in those neighborhoods no longer have the ability to just walk to their business, to their job, to get that continuous income, which allows for people who can make money in other ways to swoop in and provide economic opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's fucking amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it, like, it's not often that we get into all of this sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, like, and like, we're not even getting into it. The comic book is.
Yeah, I would say, is this time for our segment, the Delta Cryptid Class Consciousness Corner? But no, we're still in the review zone.
Yeah.
We do not yet need to editorialize, because it's just doing the work for us.
This entire episode is the class consciousness fucking episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God, if anyone listens to us and only slightly like, okay, that's fine, but I can't wait for you guys to stop talking and move on to the next thing, this is going to be a rough episode.
No, this is what we're talking about. Like, you know, like literally right now I'm watching Bruce Wayne in a homeless costume.
Yep.
He's, you know, he's draped in sort of like what appears to be a towel or carpet, and he's got a shopping cart, and he's blending in. He's doing recon, and also like, you know, putting himself at the level where he will be purposely ignored by everyone. Like, you know, this is the ultimate Clark Kent disguise. Nobody wants to look at him to see that it's Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, and this is a thing that's happened in other Batman comic books, and it's used really well here as well, that Batman understands that, you know, homeless people, people with absolutely nothing to them, like no wealth, no luxuries or goods, no one cares.
Right.
Everyone ignores them, or purposely wants not to have to see that they're a thing that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And he's used that multiple times in various comic books, and including this one, to just kind of stand there and watch things happen.
Yeah.
And no one notices.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
But he, you know, watches some gang members tag the liquor store where the kid's parents just died, and I imagine that's an upsetting, emotional thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no mention of it in this, but everything that happens, I sort of empathize strongly with Batman, and just like, oh man, watching that, reliving that has gotta suck. Ah, man. And seeing these people, like, I don't know, shit on this place has to really suck. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never empathized with Batman before, so that's a thing that this comic book does.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And, you know, and he's not, like, springing into action right now or anything, you know, like no, because, again, the violence hasn't come about. It's not just, like, I fight gangs to fight gangs.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I wanted to read this. I think this mm-hmm. is the quote itself we're talking about.
Yeah.
What was actually written down was that when big business decided it was more profitable to move elsewhere, the area slowly became a wasteland. The families hung on as best they could, but were eventually driven away by those who say crime is a viable career option, an easier way to get ahead.
Yeah.
And I think that's just good introspection into what is happening in this comic book and in many parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. And, like, one sort of thing that you have to just, like, you know, flip a switch in your mind to go with this on is, like, you know, this is written a little bit ago. Every time Batman says crime, just, you know, assume he means violent crime. Like, yeah, you know, if I'm he's not gonna break into my apartment and punch me for, like, stealing music. I'm gonna do some for this very episode, in fact. act, and I hope Batman doesn't get me for it. But, you know, he's talking about, like, shooting people. Anyway, yeah. That's all. But just anytime in the real world someone just says crime as a big umbrella, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to go, like, download some ROM hacks later today. Is that what you mean? Probably not. Like, be specific, motherfucker. But that's for politicians. That's not for Batman. So we can move on.
Yeah. And
this is the bit with the waitress. Like, you know, he's going to get a coffee or something, and he says, yeah, I've seen her before. I've taken her in, like, 5 times. She'll probably be back. I need to figure out some way to get ahead of this. I need to, like, I can't just keep punching the same people. It's not okay.
Yep. And it's really nihilistic.
Mm-hmm. Like, is this a character? Is this, like...
No, he's in disguise.
Well, no. Is this waitress a character? Like, I don't know if you're deep in the Batman zone.
I can't tell her appearance as a blonde woman might just be Catwoman.
Yeah, I don't know. Catwoman, I thought, was, like, also, like, a socialite, though, right? Most of the time?
Depends on how quickly she gets back on her feet.
Sure, okay.
But, like, the whole, I chase her, she goes, you know, gets out, does it again, I chase her again.
Yeah.
That seems to fit their character archetype together.
Yep.
If that is her, I don't know.
But it could just be, you know, like a cool crime waitress.
Yeah, it could just be a random lady who sometimes does crime. He might be in his Matchbox Malone costume.
Mm-hmm.
That's a character he pretends to be.
Okay, Matchbox Malone, huh?
They
didn't drop the name in this, so it, nope. It helps preserve a bit of the tone.
But he is in costume, keeping tabs on her. But that's prelude as he's, you know, gathering information and preparing for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And the night comes as he's, you know, noticed and taken notes and seen that a gang member or gang squad is going to attack this place. And he's watching as this small gang is basically stealing from a...
electronic store, I think.
Yeah.
They're jacking TVs.
Yeah, they're stealing from Radio Shack.
Yeah, basically. And
he's watching this and, like, noting, oh, there's one adult leader.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one in charge. He's the one leading these kids towards his path. And, like, denoting... there's also a bunch of teenagers who, while they are teenagers, they're still dangerous to me because they likely have weapons and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And then there's a young kid. He's the lookout, not gonna,
right,
if possible.
Yeah. Like, you know, just sort of, he doesn't say it outright, but, like, doing the calculus of, like, you know, hey, the younger they are, the more likely they are to maybe not want to keep going through with this shit when the Batman shows up.
Mm-hmm. And also just... the people who are adults definitely have more responsibility in their, you know, in the perpetration of these crimes.
Yeah, you can take a hit, exactly. Old man.
Yeah, guy with a gun leading teenagers to steal from a Radio Shack.
Yeah.
I'm going to punch you first.
Yeah.
And he does. Mm-hmm. He jumps in and throws down some smoke grenades or whatever they are. And this is one of those scenes where you see him sort of talk through the, all right, I'm gonna throw down the smoke, sit in the middle, and then as they're fumbling around, as soon as one comes close enough that I can see their shadow, I'm gonna spring up and punch them.
Yep.
And that's how I'm avoid getting hit.
Yep.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just, again, and this is, like, real low-level Batman, too. He doesn't have the shark repellent, he doesn't have the fucking, like, high-tech batarang shooters. Like, it's really is, like, this is... older school, I imagine, of just, like, I have some smoke bombs and I have a fun rope trick and that's about it. But he sees Marcus, who I think we named earlier.
We did not, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, the boy in the convenience store, his name is Marcus.
Yeah.
He's a young African-American boy
who's,
you know, having a bad week.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is only, like, a couple days later.
Yeah.
But
yeah, he beats up everyone else pretty much and emerges from the smoke. Which has got to be just a terrifying image.
That is the whole point. He's, like, specifically trying to be like, you know, hey, these guys are going to go and then tell everyone they know, maybe, that they saw Batman, and Batman kicked our asses, and then the legend does a bunch of the work for him. Like, that's part of his mission statement in this comic.
Mm-hmm. And he sees Marcus and is a little surprised, taken aback, and basically allows Marcus... to run away and escape, because on one hand, he's, you know, being a young criminal. On the other hand, if he had been able to stop his parent from being murdered, he might be living a moderately comfortable, lower middle class life.
Right.
Being a good kid.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, part of it is the surprise that, like, you know, hey, you know, like, why would you come and hop in on this so quickly after you had this disaster happen to you? But it's like, again, as he's, like, realizing and flipping it around his Bruce Wayne self, like, you know, people feel like they have no other choice.
Mm-hmm. And even in the very next scene, when he goes home and starts to do things that are just obscene, like, mm-hmm. he just exercises and does conditioning after, you know, being outside all night and fighting for his life.
Yeah.
He goes home and exercises to be, you know, in peak physical condition to continue to do this mm-hmm. the next fucking night.
So these weights look ridiculous, right? That's oh, yeah. like, that's absurd, right?
Those are at least 45 plates, and those are like 35s, and he's just overhead deadlifting. That's not...
Mm-hmm. That's... Yeah. Now, it is, again, laid out in this sort of, like, montage, hazy panel situation, so I assume Alfred is there spotting him, as is the responsible decision for weightlifting. He's just not on in frame.
Exactly.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, Alfred is a responsible fucking person.
Yeah. And have a spotter when you go work out, kiddos. That's our second moral. One is, you know, class consciousness. The other is, you know, have a spotter. Which Batman doesn't make explicit here, but that's all.
And while he's doing these exercises, he just sort of, I believe this is the part where he mentions that, like, would he have become the Batman if he hadn't had $1 billion to become the Batman?
To build a Batman technology and a Bat Cave where he can work out and Bat supercomputers and, you know, Bat disguises and Bat everything. No, absolutely not. I will answer his rhetorical question for him. Certainly not. He probably would have just become, you know, people puncher shooter, like, you know, that is what he's drawing attention to here, is like, yeah, I had a place to go. I had Alfred to build me gadgets, like.
Which is amazing. Like, Batman actually reminiscing about his fucking privilege, mm-hmm. allowing him to become a hero instead of, at mm-hmm. the very best, an anti-hero or mm-hmm. a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's awesome.
I'm not going to soapbox on this too hard, but just, like, you know, comics assholes love to make fun of, you know, the stuff all shitheads like to make fun of. Privilege, race stuff, gender stuff, all of that. Like, no, it's right here. Your boy Alex Ross is doing this right now. Like, you can't just sweep away comics that don't feed into, like, alpha male bullshit. This is me, again, creating this ridiculous straw man, as if any of these people would have listened this far in. I'm not really talking to them, but just, like, I love that it is canon to a degree, mm-hmm. to the degree that anything can be fucking canon in a comics universe, but, like, you know, I love that they are just actually coming right out and saying stuff. Anyway.
100%. Another thing I weirdly love is watching him exercise after going out then sleep all morning and wake up in the middle of the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
like 1, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever time it is. Because, like, that's one thing I've always bothered me about Batman, is that it's like, I work out for 12 hours a day, fight crime for 12 hours a day, and then socialize for 12 hours a day.
I've always just assumed that Alfred runs the business and just forges Bruce Wayne's signature.
I mean,
just like, whenever people bring that up, I'm like, it is not a stretch for me to just, Alfred does it. Like,
I mean, yeah, Alfred will do most of the, I'm going to take care of Wayne Enterprises and make sure you're still a billionaire by the end of the week,
mm-hmm.
obviously. But, like, his whole shtick is, like, he has to make appearances and mm-hmm. do whatever else and spends infinite amount of time learning and doing studying and researching things so that he knows how to, you know, look at a chemical thing under a microscope and be like, that's arsenic.
Yeah.
Like, to see him train and do practice at the end of the night after he's already fucking almost died, mm-hmm. and then go to bed, that's cool. I appreciated that.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm pretty into it. And also, like, I imagine a lot of people, like, you know, this is Bruce Wayne, you know, the muscle stud fucking the rich world, but I imagine most other rich folks on any given weekday are sleeping until, like, 3 p.m. after their cocaine nap. So, you know, like, I'm sure it's not that weird.
Yeah, I mean, it probably fits with his fake lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the character design, this Batman, scarred to shit.
Yeah, you see his back, and he's just, like, just marked and fucking torn and tattered. Like, it's good. I'm feeling it. Yeah, and again, I think this painterly art style goes very well with the kind of slice of life nature of this. Like, just seeing, you know, here's my nightly routine, here's, like, the realism contributes to that compared to, like, you know, Batman Animated Series art style works way better for more high-flying, swashbuckling Batman nonsense. Like, where it's more cartoony in the action, this is much more just, I'm living a life in the action. Mm-hmm. This is a live-action comic. More or less.
That kind of makes sense, yeah. As he goes to bed, he wakes up, you know, because he kept having nightmares about this fucking child he couldn't save.
Yeah.
And, that's Batman for you. Mm-hmm. That's his life. He event after that just immediately goes to try to talk to his good friend.
Yeah.
Randall Winter.
Is moving in with, he's got the next phase of the plan. He's making the pitch. He's, you know, saying, you know, again, like, this is where he comes in. Like, I've got a bunch of cops on under my thumb. You know, I can just sweep away all of those low-class problems and we can get our money making on. And the intense contempt with which the writing and art, not just Bruce Wayne, but, like, every time this guy's depicted, he looks just like a real fucking, you know, Jared Kushner piece of shit.
Yeah. Even in the writing, in this scene, Batman mentions, God, I really just want to punch this fucker in the face.
You know, yeah, I kind of get, like, I could see this being close to as much of a challenge of the mind as Batman business is of the body.
Yeah, just like,
to, like, keep your cool during all this.
Yeah, he, you know, gives off moderately evil scheme to wealth inequality and run people out of their homes and,
mm-hmm.
you know, pay off some cops to rough up some neighborhood people and so on and so forth. And
whenever, like, I do think it's always a little silly, like, we come to him lounging in the suit, like, this panel, and I think there's probably some intentionality to this, like, the old-style Batman costume with just, you know, gray spandex with the black, like, you know, underwear piece and the bat symbol, and that's it, like, is pretty fucking silly, you know, especially when he doesn't have the hood on.
But let's be honest.
I kind of roll with it, though.
Like, he's, you know, looking over the big bat computer, because you just put bat in front of everything.
Right.
And it's, you know, scanning all sorts of crime and doing all sorts of things. If at one point it says, crime here now, he has to go.
Right.
And getting into spandex, that's not easy.
He's gotta be all dolled up ahead of time, yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, what was even happening during this scene? I think he was just trying to gather his, like, faculties and trying to put together a plan to mm-hmm. how to actually stop all of this from happening.
Yeah, but, like, the economic business make that happen.
Is this the part where he mentions that, like, one of the biggest issues was that it broke down?
Yes, that was it. Like, you know, the factory either, you know, fell into disrepair for one reason or another, but that put, like, a lot of people out of their jobs. And, you know, then also the big-ass building wide open for, you know, drug, I think it has turned into a drug lab,
yeah.
Which is his next thing he's gonna hit, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. But he's lacking information. Mm-hmm. So first he goes to Penguin.
Yeah, he rolls up into Penguin's club, like, in Batman costume. He's not Bruce Wayne here in this, what looks like a pretty classy place. But, you know, he's just fucking around with him.
I love it because the intimidation tactic that he uses, like, there's always been a joke in, like, the Batman animated series and the Justice League series cartoon back in the day, mm-hmm. where it's just like Superman tries to interrogate someone. They're like, I'm not going to tell you shit. You're not going to hurt me. And then Batman whispers in their ear and they immediately tell everyone everything.
Oh yeah. This guy might hurt me.
And his intimidation tactic is going up to Penguin being, I can take away your liquor license.
Mm-hmm. Oh shit.
So good.
Yeah. I do like that, you know, we're seeing sort of this new side of this Batman who's taking the bigger approach to things by the end of this, at least he has. And apparently this is far enough in the continuity that, like, Penguin has gone legit. Like, he is not, you know, doing supervillain shit off to the side. Apparently he's been kind of just keeping it low-key doing business for some time, and maybe this is, like, you know, the whatever happened off screen before to like get to this point is interesting. Like, I don't know, maybe,
yeah,
you know, maybe the Joker's reformed and he's doing kids parties now. No, absolutely not. That's not reasonable to believe at all. But, you know, this is like the closest, you know, to, yeah.
He stopped doing like direct supervillain things and is more just doing things like Randall Winters. That's just, yeah, like, that's not okay.
He's just doing Vice.
Yeah. And, he manages to get some intel off of Penguin, you know, through extortion, basically, telling him more about where some of these crime labs are and what's going on with some of the gangs, and, you know, decides to go out and deal with some of these issues again. Right. You know, before we continue on, maybe we should delve into our little cave of self-promotion.
Yeah, we are also running a business. We've gone legit, and, we've decided to take our formidable crime talents and instead put them to use making this podcast. and the way you could help us not have to turn back to our lives of violence and debauchery is to go to patreon.com/deltacryptidproductions and sling us $1 a month. It would be, you know, not a huge burden on your wallet. If you can't do it, you can't do it. That's all well and good, but it would sincerely change our lives. If everybody listening gave $1 a month, we'd be not filthy, stinking rich, but just, like, you know, way more filthy, stinking rich than these college and post-college student, you know, student loan-having motherfuckers have been for a while.
Yeah, we could have steady resources.
Mm-hmm. But this is not just charity to these two entertainers. You know, we've got stuff in it for you, too. Donate $3 a month, and you'll get bonus episodes. On top of every episode of Judging Nerd Culture that comes out, we do a remix where we try to spin whatever the story is or the game or whatever and try to do our own. And, like, we, you know, get creative with it. Oftentimes we get really silly with it. We have a lot of fun making those episodes. They're more bite-sized. But, yeah, go on Patreon and, you know, get a piece of those.
Yeah, in just a few weeks, and I know I've been saying this for a while, the PDF of Terra Malhia will be up there as well. We're just, you know, fiddling with some final mechanical things and some numbers, but it'll be up soon, and whatever updates come along, you'll see those as well.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond $3, you get even more cool things.
Yeah.
Like, I believe at the next tier, you can just get a shout-out to whoever you want or whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
Make us say dumb, silly things, as long as it's not racist or obscene.
Yeah. Ad space, basically. You know, we will put forth your message. This is the cheapest fucking ad space on a podcast you are ever going to get, because we are yet small time. But you know, still, we'll send out a message if someone, you know, listens. If you want to propose via us, that's weird. We'd be uncomfortable. We'd still do it though. Your money dictates our lives.
It does indeed. Beyond that, you can dictate what we have to consume as far as media goes, and then talk about it. I mean, hopefully, it's not anything too long, but we'll, you know, try and accommodate pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. It is your money after all. And beyond that, you can be part of that episode with us, or any other episode, but I don't really understand why.
Yeah, I don't know. You might just, like, you know, you might just figure, hey, you guys are already doing an episode about this. I just know, I can tell. So, put me on that one, but then also I'm mandating that you do this one. Like, yeah, strategize it however you want. Again, we will bend, like, just playing cards under the pressure of your financial contribution.
Not because we're, you know, selfish and greedy, but because we appreciate your support, and because I'm a little greedy.
You're helping getting us off the ground. You're breaking the cycle. You're elevating the downtrodden. I you know, we're kind of poor, but I would not call us downtrodden.
Nah.
Like, I think that's an extremely presumptuous. I do not mean that in any meaningful way, listeners. We always can eat and stuff. Like, you know, it's not like that. But still,
it would be
nice. Give you things for the money, so yeah. You know, you're buying stuff. It is but a store anyway.
Anyways, other than that, we've mentioned before we have a YouTube channel that we're starting to do things with. We've taken a small break because I was in Cuba, but I'm back and I'm starting to do that again. And you'll see more of that soon.
If you want us to do an episode about Cuba, go to patreon.com.
I guess you could do that. But the next thing that is going up on the YouTube channel is going to be a Let's Play with me and Jess going through Borderlands, the pre-sequel.
Yeah. Last time they played Outlast, and that one is fun but spooky. I have not begun to watch it yet because it is spooky. and, you know, like, hillbillies have their dicks out or something?
No, that's number two.
Okay.
We're doing it in chronological... This is not for the podcast.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Yeah. No, so, but if you don't really care for spooks, Borderlands is a much sillier, a much brighter colored, friendlier kind of an experience. So you know, yeah, that'll be fun. Those two are entertaining. In their YouTube business. We also have been playing some Sekiro. Again, that's sort of been on hold. But you know, we need to figure that out because we've lost some footage due to PlayStation shenanigans.
But we will fix that. We'll get back on it. Worst case scenario, we continue playing like nothing happened and see what happens.
Also,
after that.
Ali reviews recent manga chapters. So if you're following One Piece, Black Clover, or My Hero Academia, he's your guy. And again, you probably are if you've gotten this far in, like some of you are.
Hopefully. So yeah, that's literally everything we're doing, everything you can get from us for just a little bit of money. We really appreciate you listening and your support. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, hell yeah. Da-na-na-na-na. I'll get the real sound effect of that, I think. That would be a good...
Just lay it over the top.
Oh, God, that would not sound good. In any case. So, you know, all of the information gathering has sort of coalesced to this point. You know, we're going to hit that abandoned factory that's become this sort of drug haven that is the final boss, essentially.
And he swoops in and plans out his route, and you can, like, in the art, you can see he's genuinely angry.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just genuinely just incensed about this particular facility having caused so much havoc for the, you know, average folk and having led so many people towards him having to punch them.
Yeah. And again, like, to again, me getting here, like, it does seem a little quaint. I mean, I understand, like, at the time this was written, it was real regular, but I'm like, ah, come on, Batman, these aren't kids in cages. You know, but this is still, like, I'm not gonna act like, you know, the sale and purchase of hard drugs isn't something that, like, really fucks people over. Like, I'm not, you know, like, it is, there is more room for compassion there than there is for a lot of the, you know, blue-collar crime that's going on here. But still, these guys all have guns, and Batman don't like that, and totally, like, me either. So, you know, I can roll with him this far still.
And, the images of the warehouse itself are really depressing.
Yeah.
Like, it's just gross and slovenly and full of, like, sweatshop abuse.
It is extremely, like, this is the most intensely unglamorous crime, which is why I'm glad, you know, this isn't a Batman who has these various, like, totally lethal throwing blades and stuff. He's just kicking people and being scary, and that's his whole deal, is that I'm scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm scary and I give you a good, like, sock in the fucking ribs and it hurts you, but...
Yeah, and he just swoops in and starts fucking everything up. Apparently uses the cocaine that he just destroys as it creates a cloud to hide himself. Horrible decision.
Oh, yeah. No,
fucking
that's
bad idea.
No, that's not a good idea. Batman, you know that's a nose thing, right? I mean, I know you've been sheltered, but come on.
If it weren't for the fact that this doesn't quite fit, this would be a too hot. This is a bad decision. This is dangerous.
Oh, let's do it too hot anyway.
So, here's the thing. If you are inside a cloud of cocaine and you're trying to breathe...
Yep. And also, like, I imagine that's terrible for your eyes, too. Like,
yeah.
Cocaine in the ear, it doesn't sound lethal, but it doesn't sound great.
It can get in through your gums. It can get in through any sort of soft, moist tissue.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, this is a bad decision.
Yeah. No. None of this is okay. this happens in... horrible bosses, I think, or something like that.
I'm remembering
there's a guy with, like, a big fucking cocaine dish, like, the ludicrous, you know, rich motherfucker. bad plan. Because, again, he literally could just, like, this could be, you know, you wouldn't even have to change the panel, just the text, and make it be a smoke bomb instead, and, like, we avert this. But, you know, okay, so that's too high. I'm too high, too high,
but it left ground. Too high. Nice. But yeah, he's doing all this, you know, beating up thugs and fighting the bad guys. And even now, thugs is like a weirdly, like, hot term. But, like, he's just fighting...
Yeah, if someone's running for office and they say thugs, that's not okay. This is comics language.
Yeah, this is mooks.
Yes, there you go.
That's the word. Mm-hmm. Just fighting these mooks as he's, you know, doing this, he hears someone... wrestle for a gun and pick one up and click it. And he even notices, like, ah, this sounds like a younger person. Like, I can hear the apprehension and the fear in their tiny hands.
Yeah.
And he turns around to see Marcus.
Yeah, yeah. I love this panel of just, like, you know, it's like a long vertical panel of him, Marcus holding the gun, and it's, like, from above, like, it's from kind of Batman's height, and it makes him look so tiny. Like, he's, like, you know, a teenager, probably, but this makes, like,
13,
like,
maybe, at most.
This and the expression on his face and just, like, kind of the way the light's hitting him, like, softens his facial features, and he looks like a baby, like, so, you know, not a literal baby, but he looks so young and terrified holding this gun, and it's like, you know, it's really affecting. All the Marcus stuff in this, I think, is like peak.
Oh, no, without a doubt. Everything, anytime Marcus is in the panels, it's just heart-wrenching and emotional and great.
Yeah.
But Batman decides, like, this kid needs to be helped and saved. So, like, he's pointing a gun at someone, and that's not acceptable.
Right.
But he's still not going to beat up the kid.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know.
God, I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, he tries to, you know, he talks to him. He tries to get to him.
Yeah, and he, like, brings up, you know, his understanding, his empathy of the situation due to him having lived through all that, and reminding him, like, hey, this sort of thing is what, you know, caused you to lose your parents.
Yeah, do you want to become this?
Exactly. And, like, every part of this scene is just put in this soft glow of light, and it's just soft.
You know, that cocaine haze of the cloudy room. But, you know, still, again, we're done with Too High. Let's, yeah.
Let's move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, everything just real sweet, honestly, and tender and soft, which is not a Batman, like, adjective. And Marcus gives up the gun in tears and hugs Batman, you know, hoping to be saved and protected and whatever else. And that's the best scene. Like,
yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I mean, you can't, but Cooper can.
Yeah, I find this comic. Like I told you, this is so bite-sized. The value for your reading time is extremely high. Like it's
just
it's,
like Batman.
It's an experience. Yeah, yeah. Everybody in this is extremely high. That's why we're getting so emotional. You know, damn it, the segment is over. I can't keep editing in the snippet. I don't even know what it is yet.
Yeah. And this is pretty much the ending here, as they've, you know, finished off the fight with the gangs and this massive drug lab that seemed to have been propelling this gang violence. And then Bruce Wayne steps in.
Yep. Yeah, he buys the factory. Nobody thinks this is weird that Batman cleared it out the night before and then he's coming to take care of it. But, I'm not really going to hit him with the Clark Kent business. Like, it's fine. This is, according to his narration, this is the first time he's ever really taken these kinds of steps, so it's probably not suspicious yet.
And it makes sense enough, like, rich man hears the news that someone did most of the work for him, and then he swoops in and does the rest.
Yeah, and, you know, like, people writing editorials in the newspaper are going to be like, oh, Bruce Wayne's just trying to capitalize on the Batman craze. He's just trying to make money off of the fame of having a Batman building, or something.
Exactly. And this is a kind of thinking through, like, the people that he talked to about all this, the fact that when he talked to his, I don't know, accountant, whoever the fuck it was just like, this isn't going to make you money. It's going to be at best, like, a net average. You're just going to come out even. And he's just like, yeah, that's...
I'm investing in the people, like, good.
Like, I'm not losing any money, and I'm not making any money, but the entire community is better. Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, yeah, he's taking care of business. Like, you know, earlier he said, like, hey, maybe this rich people sitting in armchairs drinking and talking is where I need to be fighting more of my battles, and now he's here living it, you know? Again, this is, like, Delta Cryptid Class Consciousness 101 level, but it's just so refreshing to see it in comics.
It really is.
And then, God, they make this guy look so fucking disgusting every time. Randall Winters shows up. He's just really is, like, drawn with such contempt. But, and again, this is, like, you can tell that this was kind of written in a quainter earlier time because, you know, Bruce Wayne rolls up to a party. He's talking to Randall Winters. He's like, hey, man, you know, I didn't go with your plan. I went with my own plan. He's like, you know, you... like, bad decision, you know, we could have been rich together. And then the cops show up because Batman has, you know, or Bruce Wayne rather, has done some digging and determined, like, yep, no, this guy really is, like, giving all these other cops kickbacks and stuff. And again, because it's not 2019 when this story takes place, the cops would just show up to this party and go up to Randall Winters and give him a high five. crime isn't illegal anymore, but, you know, it is still in this. So presumably that guy gets sent to jail for a cushy 3 to 5 years and then, you know, gets off on good behavior or something. Instead of just bragging about it on Twitter and not going to jail at all. Anyway.
I love when they
get him, you know?
I do love when you just start talking about, like, anything.
Well, it's just, you know, we review for the modern day. That's part of our whole deal is, like, we take into account the context, but we review based on does it hold up. And I'm just throwing out there for the audience, like, you know, this is going to seem maybe a little silly to you, as it did to me, but still, it's the good old days.
Yeah.
When crime was illegal.
And the weird thing is, like, all right, let's just finish off the last thing,
then we'll get into final
summations. But yeah, it finishes off with just Batman looking over the city again and just thinking to himself, like, I'm not going to be able to beat crime. That's a fucking wild thing to do.
Yep.
The war on crime is unwinnable.
Yep. He just, yep, might as well be staring at the camera and pointing, but it's the next best thing.
Also, this was in the 90s.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
This was the right time for it. And he's just like, but at least I saved one child.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's actually meaningful.
Yeah.
Like, saving one person, doing something impactful to an actual life.
And, I mean, he kind of is saving this community,
yes,
too. But the only thing he can verify with his own two eyes is this kid.
Mm-hmm. And, And then he just says he's going to continue to do his thing.
Yeah.
Keep saving people. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, this is probably my favorite version of Batman where he's, I don't know, a reasonable fucking person.
Just thinks through the ramifications of his actions for a few seconds and also realizes that he has money, that he can do stuff. Which, those are like some of the big criticisms that get levied at these kinds of characters, like Batman mostly, Batman being the just sort of the biggest and most famous one, but, like, you know, Tony Stark gets it too, is just like, hey, is it, like, does all the superhero shit really strike the balance against just the intrinsic kind of, you know, repulsiveness of being rich? This is, I'm quoting other people, this isn't necessarily me soapboxing, but it is, too. but it's just like, no, you know, he's doing stuff with it. Like this is, I don't know, it's just refreshing to have a comic hit that angle.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
let's final summations this motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah.
All right, everybody. Patreon.com/DeltaCryptidProductions.
But yeah, what you were saying earlier, that does this sort of, like, we try to look at things at the now and today. Does it as good as nostalgia says it is,
mm-hmm,
with some things like the Castlevania thing, like, that was a fun game, and imagine it was really fun back in the day, rough.
Yeah, fun just, rough. You know, the nature of games has changed since then, and that, like I know they're not just as much your thing, just literally in the hands, but, you know, newer Castlevanias do a lot of that stuff better, like, you know, Symphony of the Night was big for its day, but this, though, I personally feel like this is aged like a fine cheddar cheese, like, this is, like, I feel like I like this better now, like,
yeah.
I might have, you know, I'm trying to project my personal self today into the past, which wouldn't work, I'd be a different person then, but, like, I feel like I would have found this kind of corny comparatively. I still would have liked it, but just, I like it better now. I'm like, oh, how nice all of this is. Like, how quaint, but, you know, and how like, uplifting this would be.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And, like, the whole reason I brought up the Castlevania thing is, like, conventions change, mm-hmm, and what we accept as, like, the standard changes, even if it was classic and great. And this is a classic. This is a classic fucking comic book that people look at as a pinnacle of craftsmanship,
mm-hmm,
and it has held the fuck up.
Yeah,
because the things in it are, this is how poverty affects people, this is how crime affects people,
mm-hmm,
this is how you save people from that.
And also,
Yeah.
God, this is like 40 pages, and I feel like this probably took like 4 years to draw. Like, this, it is ridiculous. Like, just the literal beautiful object value of this, like, just the sensory joy of looking at this shit happen is so extraordinary. If they took all the words out, I would still give it like a 75%.
Agreed. One day I'm gonna have a collection of Alex favorite Alex Ross mm-hmm. stories. Yeah, that's where I stand. This is a great story, and there's nothing in it that is intensely problematic. Like, most of the people that he fights in this are Black or African American, or maybe some sort of Latino based on skin color, but again,
right.
All the shading is dark, so it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's because he's living in an impoverished neighborhood in a Black community mm-hmm. that's being abused by these rich people.
Yeah.
And that's his whole shtick. Fixes the factory. The workers are people from that community. They're the people living there.
Yeah.
And I think, like, if any criticism could be weighed, it would be representation, but that's incorrect. There's immense representation in a positive way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have as much qualification to talk about this, probably, but, like, you know, the real malice and bile you see is Bruce Wayne talking to the high society fucks. Like, there still is, like, a sense of necessity and duty that he's fighting people with guns before they use those guns to shoot other people. I can roll with him on that. It doesn't feel furious and malicious in the same way.
Yeah, the only times you ever sort of get that sort of emotion in the writing comes when he's focusing on, like, the adult leaders, the gang leaders, the ones running things. Because they're the ones corrupting the mm-hmm. the younger kids. And, I mean, I can sympathize the hell mm-hmm. with that.
You can't always count on that. Even from, like, comics coming out today, you know? So
yeah. I think this will hold up today and probably in another decade even.
Yeah.
Or beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So, enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. That's about it here.
Definitely. All right, folks, this has been an incredibly fun review.
Yeah.
I hope you liked it. We'll see you next week.
See you next time. Bye.